Donald Trump left us the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War.
The giant size lady balls you have to have to say that on the eve of 9/11, to say that January 6th is the biggest assault attack on democracy since the Civil War is one of the craziest things I've ever seen. And the fact, God, put a hand over my mouth right now. The fact that these moderators, if you want to call them that, did not interject and say, excuse us, Madam Vice President, are you asserting that January 6th is worse than what we're observing tomorrow on 9/11? That was my first thought when I heard her say that. My first thought. And of course, they didn't intervene to check her. They didn't intervene. They didn't say anything like that. Welcome to the program. Dana Lash here with you. We're going to break down the debate. I'm going to have some unpopular things to say. Everybody needs to put on their big girl, big boy britches and just get over it. Because everybody got your big boy, big girl britches? Because we going. We ain't progressives, right? We ain't afraid of facts. They don't hurt our feelings because we're stronger than that. So we got to have a deep dive into this. I will say two things. The fact that, you know, it's been 23 years since what happened, 9/11. 23 years ago today. It was amazing that terrorism and the open border did not figure more prominently or really at all in last night's debate. Again, on the eve of 9/11. On the eve of 9/11. I have a lot of sound bites for you today. I watched the debate. We had the subscriber event last night. I also, if you subscribe to Chapter and Verse, sent out a recap of the debate as well. That statement that she said was so beyond offensive. And she and ABC tried very, very hard. It was Trump debating Kamala and David Muir and Lindsay What's-Her-Face, the other chick. It's in all of my profession, I've never seen worse moderators. And I would have said that if I thought Trump won the debate. And I don't think either of them won the debate. And I'm going to explain why here. I want to play really quickly. I thought this was one of Trump's strongest statements. Audio soundbite 7. Listen to this.
She doesn't have a plan. She copied Biden's plan. And it's like four sentences, like run, spot, run. Four sentences that are just, oh, we'll try and lower taxes. She doesn't have a plan. Take a look at her plan. She doesn't have a plan.
Well, she doesn't. I mean, he did actually mention at some point later on that she had copied her plan from Joe Biden's website on Fox last night. I said, no, it wasn't just the source code that, I mean, it wasn't just like the plan that she copied. It was, you know, legit the source code, meaning the headers, all of it. Now, I said last night, and in the chat, we had some really good discussion. I said last night that it was clear that their entire strategy was to push Trump's buttons. And I said this in the days coming up to the debate, that Trump needed to do one thing and he needed to be disciplined. He needed to avoid the petty personal attacks that you knew they were going to bring. He needed to not let them push his buttons. And he did let them do it. He did, to an extent. He absolutely did. I think that people who deny this don't share the same goal that I do about wanting to win in November. And that's a strong statement, and I very, very aggressively mean it. I feel like people who put on blinders are plants who don't want to win in November. This debate was an opportunity for him to destroy the Kamala creation of the media, and he did not deliver. He did not close the deal last night, but neither did she. I'm not saying that neither of them won it, because I am anti-Kamala Harris. I'm being honest with you about it, and I'm not going to blow smoke up your ass for clicks like a lot of people who only forged their careers in the past 5 years and don't have a developed relationship with their audience and thus need to tell you what they think that you want to hear in order for them to stay on the air. Neither of them won the debate last night. We were the biggest losers. We, the American people. Now, I say that neither of them won the debate last night for two reasons. Trump didn't close the deal. He did not destroy the media creation of Kamala Harris, and he allowed her to push his buttons. He started off strong, lost it in the middle, and then started to bring it back, but there wasn't enough time. She started out absolutely terrified. Her voice was shaky. It was thin. She wasn't projecting. She was nervous. She kept licking her lips. She had dry mouth. She was clutching her hands and grabbing her fingers. She was fidgety. She was terrified. You could hear it audibly in her voice. She could not string together a coherent sentence. And Trump, in the beginning, to contrast it, looked calm and cool and very put together. And she started off audio sound by three. She started off weird. Listen to this. How she introduced herself.
Kamala Harris.
The handshake.
Nice to see you. Have fun.
Thank you.
Like, are you?
Welcome to you.
What was that? He knows who you are. Kamala Harris. By the way, funny note, that's how John Legend always introduces himself. Yeah, he's like John Legend, John Legend. He would say his name twice. When I met him, I did an HBO thing, and that's how he introduced himself to everybody in the room. It was fascinating. He knows who she is, though. But that was her. I felt that was her trying to do, like, I'm a professional lady, and this is a professional lady power move. She looked nervous, though, when she approached him. She did. She looked very nervous when she approached him, and she sought him out. I think she thought that was an aggressive move, but really it's not. He let her come to him. Right off the bat, it was weird. So neither of them won last night. They had some good moments and bad moments. Trump had more sound bites than she did. She was over-rehearsed, and he underestimated her. He did. He was taking some of the bait, and he lost a lot of opportunities. As I wrote last night, this was Trump's to lose. He underestimated her ability to debase herself to play in the territory of petty. He really did. And that was her goal. Her goal and ABC's goal was to push his buttons. She was to troll him with every single answer, more so than deliver on policy. And see, that's where she lost it last night. Did you learn anything new? And I'm asking this genuinely. Did you learn anything new about Kamala Harris's policies? Did she expand on anything? Did she offer you greater insight on anything? No. In fact, she was repeating verbatim what they wrote for Joe Biden that she repurposed on her issues website. So she did not establish herself further beyond what we already know. She also came across as bitter. I don't know how that's going to go. I don't know how that's going to play well or how that will play with middle America. And he did not need to respond to all her petty remarks. And she knew exactly how to get him. What have I told you over and over again? When you know someone's emotional currency, you know how to manipulate them. What is Trump's emotional currency? He likes to be publicly appreciated. In some respects, it's vanity. Some people have it. It's not a put down. I'm just telling you what it is. And this was case in point on this. This is when he really started to lose it. Audio soundbite 22. She went after the rallies. Listen to this.
And I'm going to actually do something really unusual, and I'm going to invite you to attend one of Donald Trump's rallies, because it's a really interesting thing to watch. You will see during the course of his rallies, he talks about fictional characters like Hannibal Lecter. He will talk about windmills cause cancer. And what you will also notice is that people start leaving his rallies early out of exhaustion and boredom. And I will tell you, the one thing you will not hear him talk about is you. You will not hear him talk about your needs, your dreams, and your desires. And I'll tell you, I believe you deserve a president who actually puts you first. And I pledge to you that I will.
Vice President
Harris. So two things. Either Trump's team did not prepare him well enough, and every single person who worked with him on this debate should be fired. For all the talk about Tulsi Gabbard helping him with the debate, I couldn't see anything. That's number one. Number two, it was either that or he was just not disciplined. Could be both. What he should have said to this, and this is part why rhetorical arts are so important, because this is a case of someone who has not a pot of sin, and she's not winning on substance. She's winning on speaking style. And she didn't win. It was a wash because she didn't expand anything. She didn't convince anybody. His response here. He should have left himself open to that. It feels like you're leaving your flank open when someone hits you with a petty remark and you bypass it to go after the beefier thing. It feels like you don't want to leave that open. But that's a vanity thing. The goal is to nuke your opponent rhetorically, not just to fight to secure what, you know, your personal offense, but to go after how she just opened herself wide open. This is how he should have responded. He should have said, well, you did have to lie about Beyonce performing at the DNC in order to keep people there because your party lacks enthusiasm. And you know why they lack enthusiasm? Because they switched out the candidates at the last minute. You came in last in 2020. You didn't even get 1%. You were behind Poop Booty Juice. And you've never expanded on anything since then. You have not built a record for yourself as vice president. You can't even admit the appointments that you were given, like border czar. You can't even admit to that. Like the gun control czar. You can't even admit to that. So who are you? He should have responded that way. Instead, he did this. Audio soundbite 23.
On the border.
First, let me respond as to the rallies. She said people start leaving. People don't go to her rallies. There's no reason to go. And the people that do go, she's busing them in and paying them to be there and then showing them in a different light. So she can't talk about that. People don't leave my rallies. We have the biggest rallies, the most incredible rallies.
No one gives a rat's ass. No one cares. No one cares. What he should have done is like I just said, say, you know, you had to lie and tell people Beyonce was going to perform at the DNC in order to get them to stay for you. People really had no idea who was going to walk up on stage because they subbed you in at the last second. That is how unpopular you were with your base. Tell me how many people voted for you. At least people come to my rallies. You couldn't even get anyone to go out and vote for you. You robbed millions of Democrat voters and you disenfranchised them so the Democrat establishment could coronate you as the nominee, and you never expanded on it. You don't have a record as vice president. You don't have much of a record as a Senate. Your record as AG is abysmal. So who are you? That's what he should have said. And had he have been better prepared, he would have said it. And what pisses me off is that he had an opportunity to just rhetorically gut her. I cannot stand missed opportunities. Now, I'm talking to you kind of like a coach. I'm not talking to you as someone who fanboys over politicians because I want to win. What have I told you? I'm not joking. You think this is like a joke. I'll run over your damn grandma to win. I don't care. I want to win. I will get very Machiavellian about it and I make zero apologies. I want to win in November. Part of winning and a part of a winning strategy is admitting, all right, this didn't work, so let's make this better. This didn't work, let's make that better. Losers don't say those things. Losers don't acknowledge when any mistakes were made and losers don't seek to correct them. And if you hear any loser talk like that on the right, they're plants. Now, there was a lot of this. We're going to go and deep dive into some of this because there were some foreign policy issues. First, the moderation. We're going to get in the moderation because it was, you knew it was going to be ridiculous. I knew it was going to be really bad. This is the worst I've ever seen. This even beats Candy Crowley. Can't even believe I'm saying that, but it does. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about some four major issues that they did not fact check her on, that she just glided through. We're going to talk about that as well. We're going to get press reaction and the spin and what to maybe perhaps expect in terms of a polling bounce. And I will further dive into why neither of them won last night. And we, the people, were the biggest losers. We're going to have some tough talk today. But if you want to win, it's necessary.
Hi, I'm Matthew, a theater major at Hillsdale College. Here's Hillsdale President Dr. Larry Arnn with a Constitution Minute.
The great Abraham Lincoln described the Constitution as a picture or frame of silver, built to guard or protect an apple of gold. This apple of gold was the Declaration of Independence and its principle of equal rights for all. This principle of equal rights, Lincoln said, clears the path for all, gives hope to all, and by consequence, enterprise and industry to all. There are many today who seek to limit or distort this great principle by employing a distorted definition of equality, an equality of condition or outcome, regardless how people live their lives. This distortion, if generally accepted, will lead to an America less prosperous and less free.
To learn more and get a free pocket constitution, visit ConstitutionMinute.com.
This Constitution Minute was furnished by Hillsdale College.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Well, it is hurricane season, and now you have Hurricane Francine nearing landfall. The National Guard's been deployed. A wind gust of 105 miles per hour clocked over the Gulf of Mexico. A preview of what's to come. It's supposed to make landfall tonight. So everybody stay safe out there. A Texas candidate hits a bong in a campaign ad. And Kane and I were very, at first we were like, is that Hunter Biden's lawyer? Remember? Texas Democrat Sally Duvall decides to try to be one of the cool kids. So she posts an ad on X saying it was high time for change. And nothing says change like a boomer smoking pot. And she's some lady running for the Texas House of Representatives and edgy. Blah, blah, blah. And I just don't even care.
So edgy.
So edgy. Much edgy. Mrr. Kali, I just cringe to death. Is it possible? Morrissey, who I like, says his whole life, you know Morrissey, right? This mess. My whole life has relied on free speech. And so he says, naturally, I'm gagged. And he's talking about one of his albums that was created back in May of 21 after everybody was coming out of lockdown. And it can't see the light of day. Because the words may hurt people's feelings over there. So, and he says, I am gagged, and it's true, and he's correct. He's like becoming more and more like-minded. Interesting. U.S. inflation may actually soon undershoot the Fed's 2% target because of government overspending. That's, you know. And there goes my hero. Watch him as he hoes. Dave Grohl admits cheating on his wife of over 21 years and fathering a secret love child. His lovely wife, 21 years, he's got three daughters, and he apparently just fathered a secret baby girl. The 55-year-old singer made the shocking admission on a statement that was posted on Instagram on Tuesday. He said that he became the father of a new baby daughter born outside of his marriage. He plans to be a loving and supportive parent to her. I gotta be real.
One step ahead of Hunter.
Yeah, one step ahead, but I don't know. I'm gonna withhold my tongue, but... No, hell had no fury like a woman scorned. Stick with us. Patriot Mobile, the only Christian conservative cell phone network that's out there. They want to save you money. And they want to save you money by not spending all of your hard-earned dollars that you pay for your cell phone bill. They don't want to spend that on things like promoting abortion on demand as birth control, right? And that's a real thing. Or promoting gun control. Or promoting a DEI in schools. And that's one of the things that Patriot Mobile's great at. They put momentum behind these issues that you vote to protect. And they also want to save you money. Free activation with code Dana. And right now you can get a free month of service when you use offer code Dana. They offer reliable nationwide coverage on all three major networks. You're going to get the best service without funding the left. 100% U.S.-based customer service team. They're going to make it easy to switch. Keep your phone, keep your number, upgrade. The choice is yours. Visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT. Free activation using code Dana and get a free month of service using offer code Dana. That's 972-PATRIOT, patriotmobile.com/Dana.
Make some common sense of the crazy headlines with the Dana Show podcast, your on-the-go guide for getting up to speed on today's most important stories. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or your favorite podcast platform.
What they have done to our country by allowing these millions and millions of people to come into our country, and look at what's happening to the towns all over the United States. And a lot of towns don't want to talk. It's not going to be Aurora or Springfield. A lot of towns don't want to talk about it because they're so embarrassed by it. In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there. And this is what's happening in our country. And it's a
shame. I cannot stand Kamala Harris's, like, you know, 5'3" with an attitude, 5'3" with an attitude kind of whole demeanor there with her little podium. Because she's like pulling all these like faces on purpose to try to make them look ridiculous. That's not a ridiculous story. What should be said is, can you believe that's happening in the United States? Not, can you believe someone is factually like discussing what is happening in the United States? Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. That was a little bit of Porno for Pyro's Pets because I felt like it was appropriate to come into this segment with that 90s, late 90s tunage. Now, the Federalist, it's amazing what you can do when you can't actually do some journalisming, right? Journalisming. Yeah, that works. So they actually went and got police audio recordings of police calls where local residents were reporting in these illegal Haitian immigrants, like going and eating animals in the park. And one of them called in and said that there's a dude carrying four geese down the road. Like, we're on a trail, we're at the park. And the guy was like, I'm going to my orientation for my job today, and I see a group of Haitian people. There were about four of them, and they all had geese in their hands. There's audio recording of the call. But not just that, not just the audio recordings of the multiple police reports that the Federalist has up on their website on this thing called the internet. And this call was placed on August 26th. And that was before all of this became like a huge story. Oh, you got it?
I have.
Oh, boy. Here we go. See, look, this is a real thing. Listen.
Clark County Communications.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I got a question. This is a non-emergency line, correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I'm sitting here. I'm riding on the trail going to my orientation for my job today. And I see a group of Haitian people. There was about four of them. They all had geese in their hand. They got away. I couldn't make out the first three of the license plate, but I got the numbers. The last number was 9898, and it was a gray Toyota Tacoma they took off on.
So this is just one call.
There was about four of them.
There are others. And then let's not forget the audio that we played the other day of the literal town hall that they convened specifically for this issue. I'll repeat myself. The literal town hall that they convened specifically for this issue, where they had resident after resident, black and white and Asian, everybody coming up saying this is happening. There was the video. When did we play this, Kane? Was it Monday? Did we play the audio of the woman who called in about the cat eating in the driveway?
Yes, we did that. Yep.
Somebody was eating somebody's cat in the driveway. That's not something that was created by AI. It was a real, actual video of a police response.
Did you eat that cat? Did you eat it?
Literally, in somebody's driveway.
Now, why'd you kill it? Did you guys see all this?
No, we pulled up and she was just laying there with me.
Did you see her eating it? She was eating it?
Yeah,
she was.
Got the guy who said, yeah, they were going out and getting ducks. I mean, all of them. They had another, a bunch of other residents that testified that, or that spoke at the town hall that they had, or sorry, the commission meeting, because they were talking to their town's commission, where they said, one of them said, quote, they're rummaging through trash cans. They're breaking into buildings. Another one said that they had people in their front lawn. They said illegal immigrants from Haiti in their front lawn, cussing and screaming. And the resident said, I cannot have that on my property. Well, duh, nobody wants that on their property. So why are we pretending that these residents in Ohio don't exist? Why are we pretending that the guy named Noel, he said at the public meeting that their neighborhood has become so safe that she wants out of the town. She says, I have men in my front yard screaming at me, throwing mattresses in my front yard, throwing trash in my front yard. She goes, look at me. I weigh 95 pounds. I couldn't defend myself if I had to. I don't understand what you expect of a citizen. Who's protecting us if we're protecting them? Who's protecting me? End quote. So this is happening. And did you see the dismissive, snotty way that Kamala Harris and ABC, how they were saying, oh, listen to this, audio soundbite 16. They tried to correct him. Listen.
America great again. It's a very simple phrase. Make America great again. She's destroying this country. And if she becomes president, this country doesn't have a chance of success.
Try to correct
not only
him
success,
on the pet eating
will
story.
End up being Venezuela on steroids.
I just want to clarify here. You bring up Springfield, Ohio, and ABC News did reach out to the city manager there. He told us there have been no credible reports of specific claims of pets being harmed, injured, or abused by individuals.
Yes, ABC
within the
reached out to
community.
The Democrat city official, not any residents, not the town hall. They reached out to a Democrat official, and the Democrat official shockingly was like, nope, didn't happen here. You mean to tell us, sir, that there wasn't an actual town hall where hundreds of people came forward and spoke about this? Nope, didn't happen. You mean to tell us that there's not audio recordings of people calling the police because this stuff is happening? Nope, didn't happen. You mean to tell me that there's not video of police responding to illegal immigrants trespassing on someone's property and somebody eating a cat in someone else's driveway? Nope, didn't happen. This isn't gaslighting. This is, I can't say what it is because I'll get fined. That's insane. This is insane. And you know, it took the Federalist went out and they just did actual journalism. And ABC, they did the least. Let's call a Democrat. Hey, hello, Mr. Democrat, city officials. Is this happening? Nope, not happening. Nobody's eating no geese here. Okay, thanks. That's their big fact check. Can you believe that? Now, what gets me is they interrupted like this on a number of different issues to try to fact check. And David Muir is, I can't say what I think of him. I'll get fined. I'm going to be saying that a lot today. They didn't do any of this to Kamala at any particular point. None of this to her at any particular point. Like, for instance, when she had said, I think this is audio soundbite, we got a million cuts. For instance, audio soundbite 32, she tried to walk back, and I'm willing to play a butt ton of audio for you where she talked about banning guns and confiscating guns. If you're down for it, we'll play it for the rest of the hour. You just say the word. But she said this last night, and interestingly, ABC didn't intervene to fact check her. Listen.
This business about taking everyone's guns away. Tim Walz and I are both gun owners. We're not taking anybody's guns away. So stop with the continuous lying about this stuff.
Nerf doesn't count. And first off, yes, she did. In fact, she tweeted it. She's tweeted it. I reposted her tweets where she talked about it. Bloomberg, Kamala Harris supports mandatory buyback of assault weapons. Kamala Harris says she supports mandatory buybacks. She gave an interview. There's tons of audio where she says, I want mandatory buybacks. We will ban, quote unquote, assault weapons. We will do all of that. So this idea that she never said any of this, or that she never, I mean, who's the liar? She says she would enforce a mandatory gun buyback, which is confiscation. ABC, we have the audio. ABC did not interrupt and fact check her on this. They didn't interrupt and fact check her on this. They played a few. Just go ahead and just drop it in there. Yeah. They didn't fact check any of this.
What would you do about the millions of specifically assault weapons right that are already in circulation? What do you do about those?
Well, there are approximately 5 million, to your point, Craig. We have to have a buyback program, and I support a mandatory buyback program. It's got to be smart. We got to do it the right way.
That's confiscation. Yep. She's wanting to ban guns and take them. What ABC did is they ran defense for her. At no point did David Muir or that Lindsay What's-Her-Face, I don't even know who that chick is, at no point did either of these moderators go, wait a minute, now you had this position and now you're telling us that you're 180 off of it. What changed? Why did you change your mind? That would have been an actual legitimate debate question, but they didn't do it. They hurried her on past it and they tried to get to the next thing. They did that all throughout the debate, over and over and over again. And I mean, I got to tell you, she went on emotion and I mean, really no substance. He was focusing on policy, but of course he needed to not take the bait on this stuff. I mean, they also, it's interesting because there was also the issue with when they were talking about border czar. ABC at no point tried to get her to clarify what her position was, what her role is. So you left the debate last night not knowing anything new about her job as border czar, which we said yesterday was actually greater. Her responsibilities were greater than that of a border czar. And that's it. But she also was, I mean, she, I wanted, we got to, coming up, we got to talk about the, her repeat of the Very Fine People hoax. That was another example of ABC not interjecting and saying, well, that's not entirely true, because they did it. Every damn answer that Trump gave, they were doing that last night. But Kamala Harris repeats something that's been debunked 6 ways to Sunday by the New York Times, by Snopes, by USA Today, and they let it slide. We're going to talk about that coming up. We're also going to get into some of the foreign policy aspect of it. And this debate, what does this mean for the polling? What does this mean? Because we got early voting starting, what, less than 2 weeks. And the race couldn't be tighter than it is right now. We have a lot to hit today as we move our partners that help bring you free radio, Tax Network USA. Because with your tax dollars, you're paying $88,000, where we all are, additional new IRS agents to crack down on people. They've been sending pay up notices. You don't have to face this alone. If you're being harassed by the government theft, I mean the IRS, Tax Network USA is here to help. So you can rely on their expertise. They have a track record at Tax Network USA of saving their clients over $1 billion in back taxes. Their expertise and their reliability in tax relief is second to none. It doesn't matter if you owe $10,000 or $10 million, if it's personal or business. They have the tools and the experience to handle any situation. These are skilled professionals. They'll get you the best possible resolution for your tax issues. Whether you're able to pay or on a fixed income, you'll get the most favorable outcome and tailored solutions to help you resolve your tax burdens effectively. So don't let the IRS control your life. Empower yourself with Tax Network USA support. Take charge of your financial future. Call 1-800-958-1000 or visit TNUSA.com/Dana. Work with a company that you can trust. They'll help you resolve your burdens once and for all. TNUSA.com/Dana.
We have a huge hole in our nation's roof. There should be only one priority for our lawmakers. America is spending $3 billion a day in paying off our own interest. You only need to be voting for candidates who can address this problem.
Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Get the lowdown on the latest news with a side of laughs whenever you want. Subscribe to the Dana Show podcast on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
I'm going up to my granddaughter's birthday in New York. Then we're going to watch a debate. And then tomorrow I'm doing 9/11. I spoke to the vice president.
She's doing 9/11.
Cool and collected.
What in the world? What kind of, well, the widow of one of the fire chiefs killed in the terrorist attack did not appreciate the president's remarks on that. Audio soundbite 49, she called him out publicly.
My husband of 30 years was one of them. It is outrageous that our government would ever entertain the thought of granting the terrorists a plea deal. If not for the outcry of the 9/11 community, who knows what might have transpired. It has been 23 years, and the families deserve justice and accountability. The elected officials here today show their respect and reverence to the families on September 11th. Or, in our president's words, do 9/11. Quite a flippant remark. But please remember that the September 11th families live it every day, not just on the anniversary.
Wow. And she's right. I mean, that was a very flippant remark. Of course, this was a guy who was checking his watch at the funerals of, you know, service members. So, very flippant remark. I'm going to do 9/11. What is that?
I'm going to do D-Day.
Yeah, I'm going to go do D-Day. It's a solemn event, and we're going to talk about it coming up, but there's, I mean, everybody remembers where they were, and I've written about it. I have a piece up over at Substack, my chapter and verse, where I talk about it, and I've written about it every single year. So that was an incredibly flippant remark from this president. The debate last night, because a lot of people were asking me, who do you think won? Who do you think won? And like I said, I think it was a wash. And I think that Biden, when Trump needed to be how he was with Biden, and I'm totally fine when you, as Kane and I were talking, you know, you're showing some of your personality like he did. This was audio soundbite 18. He stole this line from her and just completely stole her thunder. Listen.
She was big on defund the police. In Minnesota, she went out. Wait a minute. I'm talking now. If you don't mind, please. Does that sound familiar?
That was good. Now, that's fine. And she gave him the opening because she immediately started out petty and non-substantive. Now, he needed, and it's fine to have your, you know, for things like that. But that's very different from taking the bait and responding to misdirection, which is what she was doing most of the time. And we're going to talk about that with further example. We're also going to get into, particularly, I think one of the greatest examples of this is their discussion on abortion and Ralph Northam. We're going to talk about that coming up next hour. But he needed to be disciplined and not take the bait, Biden, I'm not saying that Biden took the high road. I don't think that Biden would have taken the high road if he had a choice. I think it was cognitive ability that made it seem like he took the high road, but he didn't take the high road. But it was different. And I feel like Trump was not, I think he underestimated how petty she would be and how much she would debase herself for that. You have to realize their base of voters and the people and the independents they think they need to reach, their tactics are all fluff. I don't know how else to put it. They just want the optics of looking like you're scoring a goal without actually scoring a goal. She did not expand upon her record. She did not flesh out any policy, and she didn't really do a whole hell of a lot, really at all, to differentiate herself from Biden. And that's what Trump really needed to do most. And he started doing it towards the end of the debate, but then it was out of time at that point. When he could have nuked her, when she was talking about, you know, the military leaders hating him, we'll discuss that. He could have said, well, who got 13 service members killed? Don't you think that the military leaders hated that you ignored their counsel, Vice President Harris, when they told you and Biden, you, the last person in the room, to not withdraw the way that you did because this would be the result, and you disregarded their counsel and you did it your way anyway, and now 13 service members are dead. Ask those same military leaders who have time to sit around and gossip what they think about that. That should have been his answer. That should have been his answer. There were so many opportunities where he could have shivved her on stage rhetorically. And that's what he could have done it. And he didn't deliver on that. So we're going to talk. It was like the Smiling Friends debate. I have that clip up on Chapter and Verse. It was just like that. We got a lot more on the way. Second hour coming up. Stick with us. People who will bring you free radio over at Kel-Tec, the P15. It is the lightest, sleekest, smallest, and yet most powerful 9mm double stack mag that you could get. And it's from the inventors of the micro compact pistol category. You have two versions. You have the polymer. It's a striker fire pistol from Kel-Tec polymer, and then the metal frame version. Metal frame, I have both, but I'm kind of partial to the walnut wood panel on the metal frame. Just very James Bondy, super, super classy. You got two mags that come with it. Standard 15 round with minimal pinky extension. You also have a flush fit double stack mag that holds 12 rounds. Tritium and fiber optic front sight, fully adjustable fiber optic 2-dot rear, keeps you on target. Lifetime warranty from the inventors of, again, that micro compact pistol category. No stopping power, super concealable, quality made right here in the US of A. Innovation performance, Kel-Tec. Learn more at KelTecWeapons.com. That's KELTEC weapons.com. It's the P15. Tell them Dana sent you.
I want you all to know that America today is on bended knee in prayer for the people whose lives were lost here, for the workers who work here, for the families who mourn. This nation stands with the good people of New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut as we mourn the loss of thousands of our citizens. I can hear you! I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Say what you will about Bush, and I've said my share. That, and then the throw in the pitch at the Yankees game, were two pivotal moments in U.S. history. And today is the 23rd observation of the, I mean, horrible attack on America, 9/11. Welcome to the program. Dana Lash with you, top of the second hour. Obviously, you can listen coast to coast. We're also at Channel 347 DirecTV, and you can find us as well at Rumble, where the chat happens every day during the program, and on X. It's weird when you live through such a monumental moment in history, because I've always wondered what it was like for my grandparents living through the attack on Pearl Harbor. My grandfather was a teenager, and he was reportedly, according to family lore, he and his brother were so mad about what had happened that they ran down and enlisted the next day and lied about their age because he was under 18. I think a lot of those guys did. I had friends who enlisted after 9/11 as well. who were infuriated, and they enlisted. And it's weird because I think everyone got plugged in their own way. And I've been very open about my political trajectory. I was like 21 years old, 21 years old when that happened. And I was on my way to becoming a full-fledged conservative, having been entirely raised by Democrats. And I didn't even know any Republicans until I, you know, literally went to college. And that moment marked my complete metamorphosis ideologically. And I had a baby in my living room floor. And it's weird because, you know, that baby is now like sitting in a studio today. It's very weird. And all of this stuff was happening live on television. And I think that was television's last great moment of history as well. Because it was before social media, you saw the towers coming down, you saw the plane go through. I mean, you blinked and when they were covering it live and you almost missed it. It was extraordinary. And in the years since, I've met so many people who live there through it. And some now live in our neighborhood in Texas. And I think in the weeks after that was the last time that America felt really unified. And it's a shame that our kids have not grown up experiencing that or have no familiarity with what a unified nation feels like. Unified in that we remember our nation and our security comes first, and we can disagree with each other, but ultimately we're all Americans and we have each other's backs. And it's not like that anymore. And to have I think that it does something psychologically to generations to come when they don't experience that, because we are so far removed from it. But it's very weird to live through history in that way. I mean, nobody knew what was going on. There were attacks and rumors of attacks. And Ari Fleischer every year always tweets minute by minute exactly what happened. And it's pretty stunning as well. It was, I think, one of the first times, because Pearl Harbor, when a lot of people got their information, it was delayed. This was one of the first times, and I wrote about this, where these radical Islamists, they didn't bring a war to American soil. They brought it to American living rooms. Because it was like the towers were falling down in your house. To watch it happen live and to think that something like this couldn't happen was a gut check. It really was. And I did take in account, because everyone experiences it in their own way. And I just was watching this on television and I looked in the floor and I had, you know, a 5-month-old, you know, 6-month-old baby playing in the floor. It was the craziest thing in the world. It was a very bizarre dichotomy. I had a kid who was completely oblivious to everything that was going on, happening to his country and his future. And I'm standing over him, you know, like some mother bear watching this happen on television. And that was a big moment for not just this nation, but individually. Everybody experienced it their own way. And it was weird for us to come out of it as a nation as well. Some years ago, I took my kids to D.C. on a work trip, and we went to the Smithsonian, and they had some of the World Trade Center wreckage. And it was weird to see them stand in front of it, especially my oldest, who was a baby when it came down. And I remember there's two things that I touched on. Reagan's quote about freedom, which I thought, nothing really makes you understand parenthood more than this quote. He said, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for and protected and handed on for them to do the same. Or one day, we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was once like in the United States, where men were free. I think it's important every year to recount it as viscerally as possible. It is so incredibly important because every year we become more and more distanced from it. And then one day, all the people who lived through it won't be here anymore. And it's going to be another chapter in a history book where there isn't a real experience to share other than what's already been preserved carefully in pages or in photos or in video. And it's one thing to watch something and understand the weight of it. It is another thing entirely to hear someone who lived through it, or my friends who were there, who experienced it, to hear them talk about it in their voices in front of you. There are two pieces that I linked for you over at my Substack, Chapter and Verse. One was a remarkable piece of journalism about 911 calling September 11th, called The Falling Man. And the other is probably one of my favorite pieces about it from my friend Dan McLaughlin. And, you know, I have a habit of bringing literally everything back to Lord of the Rings, because Lord of the Rings is literally the greatest stories that have ever been written. They really are. Next to the Bible. They're fabulous. Tolkien is a genius. And there was a point, and he writes about this, because when 9/11 happened, Dan McLaughlin worked in New York. He was there. He was a sports writer. And he worked a block away from the Trade Center. And it just so happened that he was late that morning. He voted in a primary election for mayor, and that made him run late. He stopped to vote in it. And he was late, so he got on a later train. He may have been up there in the middle of all of it when the tower went down. And he writes about how when he finally got there, the first plane had already hit. Nobody knew what was happening. He said it was like a Japanese monster flick. That description always stayed with me. He said, quote, "It was a scene straight out of every bad TV movie and every Japanese monster flick simultaneously. Everyone around me was screaming and running away. And I didn't have time to look and see what I was running from. I just took off, hoping to get away from whatever it was in case it was falling towards us." He said, "Nothing else can compare to the adrenaline rush of feeling the imminent presence of deadly danger." And then later, as people were gathering in the streets, they were talking, and he heard that there was another plane that hit the towers. And he was thinking about, you know, his dad was a fireman, his brother was a cop. And I love how he puts everything in such a accessible perspective, because his building was damaged too. And he talks about that. And he says that my mind starts to grasp onto the little things, the photos of my kids and my wedding and the radio in my office that I listened to so many Mets games on. And he talks about the little Shea Stadium tin on his desk that played Take Me Out to the Ball Game when you opened it to get a binder clip, the new calculator I brought over the weekend, all vaporized or strewn halfway across the harbor. He said the things that can mostly be replaced, they're just things. He said, but it's staggering to see the whole context of your daily routine disappear because somebody, and not faceless cowards really, but somebody in particular with a particular agenda and particular friends around the world wants you dead. And he talks about how it was difficult originally for him to move on because he's a sports writer. You have 9/11. And so many people, thousands of people, their lives are irrevocably changed. How do you move on from that? How do you move on from that and not be corrupted by bitterness? And he answered it. And I always thought that this was such a brilliant piece of writing, how you can't go back to September 10th. But this is what he says. And he wrote about baseball. He says, there's a scene that comes to mind, and I'm placing it in Lord of the Rings because that's where I remember it. He said, Frodo lived all of his life in the Shire, where the world of hobbits revolves around hospitality and particular etiquette and family snobbery and the silliest little things, silly at least in comparison to the great and dangerous adventure he finds himself embarked on. Aragorn, one of the men, has been patrolling the area around the Shire for years, warding off invading creatures of all varieties of evil. And Frodo asks Aragorn eventually whether he isn't frustrated with and contemptuous of hobbits and the small, simple concerns, the contemptuous hobbits and the small, simple concerns that dominate their existence when all of these dangers, such dangers are at hand. This is a piece that Dan McLaughlin has written. He continues and says, Aragorn responds that to the contrary, it is the simpleness and even the pettiness of the hobbits that make the task worthwhile. Because it's proof that he has done his job, that he has kept them so safe and insulated from the horrors all around them, that they see no irony, no embarrassment in concerning themselves with such trivial things in a hazardous world. It has often struck me that you could ask no better description of the role of law enforcement and the military keeping us so safe that we may while our days on the ups and downs of made-up games. And he adds, that's why baseball still matters. There must be time for mourning, of course, so much mourning, and time as well to feel secure that 55,000 people can gather safely in one place. And he says that The merciful thing is that because, save for the Super Bowl and the Olympics, U.S. sports are so little followed in the places these evildoers breed, murderous men, by contrast, have little interest in pennant races, that they have not acquired the symbolic power of our financial and military centers. But that may not be forever. And he says that's why his column will be back. And he says, and then he goes, he adds that, you know, the yardsticks by which we measure nastiness and bicker over games, and our freedom is best expressed not when we stand in defiance or strike back, but when you're able to live again normally. And you go on with all of this. I thought that was such a brilliant way of writing all of that. And I also think, too, to put it in context with everything that we're living with right now, that needs to be how you, that needs to be the attitude that you have in going about all of this day to day. Yes, it was a hideous debate last night. And we are in very weird times politically. Nobody knows what's going to happen after November. But the surest way to surrender is to stop being a happy warrior and stop finding joy in all of these other things. You can chew gum and walk at the same time. When you stop living, that's when you're surrendering. So keep that in mind as we continue the show and we go through and deep dive in this debate. And that's one of the reasons why I like to make things absurd and hysterical and completely irreverent sometimes. Because you're living. And you're not surrendering to the doldrums of politics. We got a lot more to get into. We're rolling towards headlines. And as we do so, partners of the show, ReadyWise, heaven forbid something goes sideways. You want to make sure that you're prepared, that your family is prepared, that you have meals on hand, nutritious meals, meals where you can trust the ingredients to feed your family no matter what challenges you're facing. And this is one of the things that makes ReadyWise stand out against everyone else. You know the chain of command for all of your food. So everything is made with high quality U.S. ingredients, and it's packed in their state-of-the-art U.S. plant. It sends out from that plant. So you know where your food's coming from, and you're supporting U.S. jobs. It's all freeze-dried, dehydrated, easy to prepare, just add water, 25-year shelf life, so it'll be ready when you need it for you. And they have two offers right now. Use promo code DANA20 at checkout to get 20% off any regularly priced item. They also have their buy one, get one 72-hour food kit. So that's $100 in value slashed in half. Buy one, get one, $50 for two. And their boxes include two boxes, 12 pouches of premium survival food. You got three hots, drinks, and snacks, over 11,000 calories in each kit. So visit ReadyWise.com, use promo code DANA20 at checkout, and get 20% off of any regularly priced item. ReadyWise.com, promo code DANA20, DANA20 for 20% off.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So we had Chip Roy scheduled for the bottom of this hour after headlines, right? Well, he got pulled into an emergency meeting with the speaker, and now we know why. Speaker Johnson has pulled the vote on the stopgap bill for short-term government funding after a number of Republican lawmakers have said that they oppose the measure. He announced that he's pulling the planned vote for the afternoon on the CR. The measure includes the SAVE Act. And so they said that it looks like they're working to try to build consensus on it. They've been going back and forth. So we'll keep you updated with all of that. But that's some of the latest on it. Also, this is an interesting story. Apparently, with the Neanderthals, why did they all die off? Well, apparently they lacked get up and go. I don't know where they get this from. They said that maybe they were unadventurous and insular and they never really strayed far from home. That's what they think, and I don't know. It sounds like a Monty Python thing.
They were distracted by Netflix.
They were distracted by their phones. Almost one in four millennials and Gen Zers say they won't have kids due to finances. So that's horrible, and it's also the end of America because our birth rate is starting to take a nosedive, and that can't happen. It really can't. They said a quarter of millennials and Gen Z adults without children said they plan to stay that way. 23% of 18 to 43-year-olds. Wait, how are you 40? Stop it! You are not a millennial. If you're 43, shut up. You're Gen X. Stop it. I'm so done with this stupid nonsense. Stop it. They said that the U.S. birth rate is slowed to a record low, and it's expensive to raise kids. It's expensive to try to get a house, and we need a policy reversal. We're going to talk more about that here coming up as well. Stick with us. Partners of the show, they're somewhat new. Burn a Gun. Burn a Gun is a non-firearm firearm. I know that's like a weird thing to say, but there are places in this country where you can't carry. And I love the luxury, or would love to have it all the time, of saying that I'm not going to go where I cannot carry. But I don't always have that luxury. And I have friends that work jobs in D.C. that they have to be in D.C. and they have to go to certain places, and they are not able to carry all the time. So they diversified their defensive options. And you can do that with the Byrna gun. Now, the Byrna, what it does is it shoots projectiles that it's like chemical irritants that can disable threats. Now, the stun guns that normally people would get, they're like maybe one or two shots. The Byrna SD, their most popular model, has a 5-round capacity. And again, it shoots those chemical irritant projectiles to give you so you can use that to defend yourself and give yourself, a fighting chance. It's always good to have diverse options. And you're not able to, I always tell people to carry, but sometimes, you're prevented in doing so. So it's good to have diverse options at the ready. And this is where Byrna comes in. Now you can learn more about it. They got different models. They have different projectiles. They got accessories, all kinds of stuff. The Byrna SD is their most popular model. It's something that law enforcement has been looking at as well and acquiring across the nation to have some options too. Visit Byrna.com/Dana. You can get 10% off your purchase there. That's Byrna.com/Dana. Check out your options. Byrna.com/Dana for 10% off.
The Dana Show Podcast, your fast, funny, and informative news companion for those always on the move. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's remember Charlottesville, where there was a mob of people carrying tiki torches, spewing anti-Semitic hate. And what did the president then at the time say? There were fine people on each side.
Well, that's not what he said. That's not what he said at all. That was another example in the debate last night where Kamala Harris lies through her teeth and ABC didn't step in to fact check like they did with Trump on everything. They didn't say anything about that. In fact, would you like to hear what he had to say on it? Yeah. Because I think this is audio soundbite 21. Let's hear what he actually said. Go ahead and play it.
Excuse me. And you had some very bad people in that group, but you also had people that were very fine people on both sides. You had people in that group, excuse me, I saw the same pictures as you did. You had people in that group that were there to protest the taking down of, to them, a very, very important statue and the renaming of a park from Robert E. Lee to another name. But you know what? It's fine. You're changing history, you're changing culture, and you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally, but you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay?
There were people that were in that group that gave interviews to the press that said that they hated neo-Nazis and the freaks that came out. And they were there just because they thought that the statues represented history and there was a reason why they were enacted. I feel like a lot of people don't understand why Lincoln did some of the things that he did following the Civil War and why there were these overtures made for the purpose of maintaining the Union. And that's one of the reasons why they had some of these monuments, because you had half of the country that lost thousands of people. And it was to preserve part of preserving that Union, not in any way lionizing or venerating the purpose for what they did, but recognizing that they had suffered losses as a concession to maintaining the state of the Union. And there were people who wanted to protect what those statues stood for, that being it, because they felt that if you lose that, you lose a significant portion of our history when we were at each other's throats and, good or bad, it's part of the nation's history. And it's so stupid how the left and the media wanted to say without any attention to nuance that, oh, they just believe the same things, these Nazis out there. They clearly didn't. And that's what he was alluding to. And so this was debunked by like Snopes and, a million different entities, and they never stepped in and corrected her like they did everything else. Also, let's play another thing that they didn't, audio soundbite 24. They were really going at this. Listen to this question, line of questioning here.
Mr. President, for 3.5 years after you lost the 2020 election, you repeatedly falsely claimed that you won, many times saying you won in a landslide. In the past couple of weeks leading up to this debate, you have said, quote, you lost by a whisker, that you, quote, didn't quite make it, that you came up a little bit short. Are you now acknowledging that you lost in 2020?
No, I don't acknowledge that at all.
But you did say that sarcastically.
It was said, oh, we lost by a whisker. That was said sarcastically. Look, there's so much proof. All you have to do is look at it. And they should have sent it back to the legislatures for approval.
This is what he needed to say in this answer. What he should have said is, why are you not asking the candidate, the substitute candidate on stage with me? That's what he should have said every single time he spoke about her, too, a substitute candidate. He should have said, why are you not asking the substitute candidate on stage with me why she said, and she did in video, we've played the audio before, she actually said that Trump did not win in 2016. Not only has she said that, Joe Biden said it, Hillary Clinton has said it, the head of the DNC has said it, numerous other elected Democrat officials have also said it. Listen, she was asked about this. Listen. This is the montage.
How can you win with Russian interference, though?
That's what I'm scared about in 2020. But rightly.
Because I think he's an illegitimate president that didn't really win. So how do you, you know, fight against that in 2020?
You are absolutely right.
He's an illegitimate president in my mind.
Would you be my vice presidential candidate? Folks, look, I absolutely agree.
Trump didn't actually win the election in 2016. He lost the election, and he was put into office because the Russians interfered.
Trump knows he's an illegitimate president.
Why are they asking Trump this when this question should be directed to the vice president of the United States, who her and her party have repeatedly said that he didn't really win in 2016. And not only did they say that he didn't really win in 2016, they actually tried to undo the election and undermine it. And this gets into how the DNC got busted for hiring a firm called Fusion GPS, which is an unregistered foreign agent, by the way. They ought to be in violation of the FARA Act, but apparently they're not. Glenn Simpson, the Fusion GPS, they actually do work for Russian oligarchs. In fact, they had Natalia Vedelitskaya and other people, including the wife of the DOJ guy who was running all of that through FISA. They had... They were lobbying Congress to overturn the Magnitsky Act. And the Magnitsky Act had to do with a guy who blew the whistle on money laundering and all of this other stuff, embezzlement, et cetera, by these Russian oligarchs. They killed him. And as a result, these sanctions were placed on these oligarchs. Fusion GPS was hired to lobby Washington to overturn that. And that is also the firm that simultaneously was working with the DNC to run this like stupid, dumb, discredited oppo that the FBI wouldn't even verify. They were planting it in newspapers through like-minded reporters, through sympathetic reporters to progressivism, planting it, basically using these reporters' names and giving them the copy. The reporters would run it, and no one would actually say that it was like a paid psyop from the DNC and this unregistered foreign agent. And then those stories were generated were then taken as evidence to get a surveillance warrant through a FISA court that didn't even follow the proper protocol to vet where the information came from. And it was withheld from that FISA court that it was actually paid campaign material from the DNC. So that's a question that should have been asked last night. And interestingly enough, it wasn't. So I can't take seriously at all whatsoever any criticism. I don't care if you think he's a loon for saying it. I actually think that it's very difficult to steal a federal election. But I don't want to hear any criticism of him saying this when the press allowed for this garbage to be said since 2016. Where do these people get off saying, oh, no, you can't say that in 2020 because we were saying it in 2016. Not only did they say it in 2016, my gosh, they said it after Bush won. They said it after George W. Bush won. The hanging Chad fight, golly, we lived through that. So, no, that's stupid. And the fact that they never, ever brought that up. Trump should have brought that up. Another missed opportunity. He should have brought it up. And here's another aspect of it. Let's talk about the in vitro and the abortion stuff. Here we have, once again, ABC working to try to correct Trump. This is when they're debating Trump about post-birth abortions. Now, this happens to coincide with, this all comes from the Ralph Northam and the Virginia story. We're going to play this first, and then we're going to tell you what they're all talking about. This is Audio Summit 11.
I have been a leader on IVF, which is fertilization. The IVF, I have been a leader. In fact, when they got a very negative decision on IVF from the Alabama courts, I saw the people of Alabama and the legislature 2 days later voted it in. I've been a leader on it. They know that, and everybody else knows it. I have been a leader on fertilization, IVF. And the other thing, they...
Well, I needed where they were... This isn't the post-birth, but where's the where the ABC pushed back on him? That's the audio that I need.
I give tremendous credit to those six justices.
There is no state in this country where it is legal to kill a baby after it's born. Madam Vice President, I want to get your response to President Trump.
Well, as I said, you're going to hear a bunch of lies, and that's not actually a surprising fact. Let's understand how we got here.
All right, so first off, that's a lie. Let's prepare Audio Soundbite 15, the one with Ralph Northam, because this has to do, and we called him Ralph Abortion, or Abortion Northam, right? I can't remember all the names we had for him. This has to do when he did a radio interview where he said that, and this was in the wake of the Women's, quote-unquote, Women's Protection Act, where you had all these Democrats in the Senate that were co-sponsoring a bill that would legalize not only taxpayer dollars to be used for abortion, but allow for abortion all the way up until the moment of birth on demand as birth control. And then it also incorporated some of the state-by-state Born Alive Infant Protection Act, like what you had in Illinois, where infants that were born alive after failed abortions would be given medical care, which Tim Walz actually removed that in Minnesota. We'll talk about that in a moment. But this is Audio Soundbite 15. This is what he's talking about.
You know, when we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion.
I mean, that's literally it. And by the way, Joe Biden just earlier this year, and this is proposed, he actually supported budget measures. His budget included taxpayer-funded abortion all the way up through three trimesters, just to lay that on the table for you. That was Ralph Northam, the Virginia governor, who at the time, he was endorsing and defending abortion on demand up till the moment of birth as birth control. While a bill was being proposed in the Senate, co-sponsored by tons of Democrats, and Kamala Harris as vice president and president of the Senate, per being VP, would have been aware of this. And this is something that they promoted, and when it came back to hit them, because the surveys came, different polling came out showing that the majority of Democrats actually wanted a limitation after 15 weeks, and it showed how unbelievably extreme Democrats are, then they tried to rewrite the history of it. ABC had no business trying to step in and propagandize in a debate, and that's exactly what they did. Trump was not incorrect in what he was talking about. And speaking of the Born Alive Infant Protection Act that was like in Illinois and other states, in Minnesota in 2015, the state had been required to report abortions, failed abortions in which the baby survived. But Tim Walz removed that. He removed it. That is what he did. As governor, infants could be denied treatment if they survived a failed abortion. That is not hyperbole. I'm not exaggerating any of that for a particular purpose because I don't have to. That's what they allowed. And there are examples of where it was put into practice. He pushed for the repeal of the measure in 2023 in May, stripping the state's requirement that the measure be taken to preserve the baby's life and health. And they just said, oh, well, you can. They can be given care, a nebulous definition of care not added. So that can be interpreted to be anything. The Harris campaign will not answer when asked about this. I have more on this topic because Trump and Harris sparred over it. And Harris tried to make it like a sexism thing, but it's an extremist thing. The majority of Democrats do not agree with the Democrat Party on abortion up until the moment of birth. And again, you don't have to take my word for it. You can literally go and read what they interestingly call the Women's Protection Act and read the verbiage of that proposed bill. That is verbatim exactly what was being allowed. And also the Hyde Amendment, if you believe that money isn't fungible, which, you know, I do. So I think it's kind of irrelevant in the first place. But they were actually allocating taxpayer dollars even more so for abortion services, even after Planned Parenthood gets $500 million a year annually anyway. Now, ABC did not allow for full discussion on this. And then, in fact, when Harris started struggling, they pushed the conversation on to the next topic. I thought they spent an inordinate amount of time on it in the first place.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Oh my gosh, I want to murk this dude. So a Florida dude was arrested for throwing a chihuahua off a balcony like a football, says the sheriff. He's going to pay the price for his crime. This sweet little puppy, this sweet little chihuahua, it's got a little broken leg, and thankfully he's alive, and he's got a little cone on, and he's being taken care of. God help me. Three-year-old chihuahua broke multiple bones. Lee County Sheriff's Office, they responded to Blue Pear Animal Hospital after a dog was admitted with serious injuries. The guy, they said it was dropped off by a man who said his friend threw the dog off the balcony. I'm glad that the other guy took the dog in to get treated. I'm glad that that happened. But Lee County detectives tracked down the dog's owner. He provided them with information that led them to the suspect, 30-year-old Dalton Souza. That's D-A-L-T-O-N-S-O-U-S-A. Dalton Souza, 37 years old, in Lee County, Florida. He was arrested Monday and charged with aggravated animal cruelty. Please, please, please put me in charge of punishments for criminals who hurt animals and children. Oh, I will not charge you a dime. I'll pay you to do it. I will pay you to let me do it. And then you can, yeah, we'll pay-per-view it. And then you can raise that money for like rehabilitation fees for the animals and the kids. Oh, because I am positive I can come up with some super inventive ways to pay back the people who do this. Oh my gosh, it brings me joy. In fact, please let me do this. Like that, whoever wins in November, just let me do that. Stay off, leave my guns alone, get rid of the IRS, and let me do this. I won't even take a salary. I'll pay you. So that guy's going to pay a serious price for that. Are you serious? Okay, you guys know that I love like cryptid stories and things like that, right? This is like a Bigfoot in the swamp, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like
the Barden Booger.
Yeah, their version of Bigfoot.
It's Florida's version of Bigfoot. They said that, I guess people are saying that they have seen the Barden Booger in Putnam County, Florida. It's a Florida spin on Bigfoot. And they said that his name comes from Barden, the small rural town of like a few hundred people, and Booger, which is a slang term for a boogeyman. Okay, so apparently there are people reported seeing it. It is Florida Man that's reporting seeing this in the swamp somewhere. So I'm just saying maybe.
That'd be true.
I don't know if you want to take it totally seriously. But they actually have a mid-Florida Bigfoot research group that they founded to like track this thing down. So good luck with that. Look at that. We got more in store. Congressman Chip Roy will be joining us coming up in our third hour. Stick with us.
Well, I will tell you, I agreed with President Biden's decision to pull out of Afghanistan. Four presidents said they would, and Joe Biden did.
Ooh, no, well, he didn't really. It was never an issue of if they were going to withdraw from Afghanistan. The question was always how they were going to withdraw from Afghanistan. And back when all of this was happening, when Trump was president, he wanted to do the same thing. And military council said, no, this is what's going to happen. You're going to leave a power vacuum. And if you look at the timeline, if you do it in spring, if you do it in fall, if you do it all, what's going to end up happening is this is the warring season. They literally have a warring season over there. And it's going to be just mass chaos. You cannot do it then. And you have to leave a residual force, which he did. He listened to the counsel of the military officials. He did. And then Kamala Harris and Joe Biden did not. They heard military advice and they disregarded it and did it their way so they could have the talking point. They wanted the talking point they have to say that they were the ones who withdrew from Afghanistan, cost 13 service members' lives. And that's a price they were willing to pay so they could have that talking point. But is it a price that the families were willing to pay? I mean, that's, it's inexcusable. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you at the top of this third hour. Channel 347 DirecTV, where you can also watch the simulcast. The chat happens at Rumble. And of course, you can find us at on Facebook as well and X. Coming up, Congressman Chip Roy will be joining us. We'll be talking about some of the debate and also the fight in the House over all of this, because this has been, I'm telling you, it's pretty, it's something else. The debate last night, I think it was a wash. I think we ended up being the biggest losers in all of it. And I think that Kamala Harris knew how to push Trump's buttons and Trump let her to an extent. And she didn't expand upon any of her policies. She did not define who she was. She did not showcase anything really to anybody about her positions or how she did not succeed in separating herself from Biden. That was a goal that she needed to accomplish last night, and she didn't. And Biden or Trump did not end up, he did not destroy the media creation of Kamala Harris. And so it was a wash. She took the bait. She sacrificed talking about her. Well, she didn't have any policy, assuming that she did. She could have talked about that instead of trying to do all of this little petty stuff. It's just so dumb. All of it's so dumb. So, some interesting pieces last night. There's one I wanted to get because I did like some of his personality in some of it. He did the quiet please again, audio soundbite 29, because she kept interrupting him. Interesting how the mic was only situationally muted. Listen.
Please, I'll give you a minute here.
Putin would be sitting in Moscow and he wouldn't have lost 300,000 men and women, but he would have been sitting in Moscow. Quiet, please. He would have been sitting in Moscow much happier than he is right now. But eventually.
Well, he didn't invade when Trump was in office. So, yeah, it's kind of an important thing to point out in all of that. There were a number of issues that Harris was allowed to just run on, and without any kind of pushback, no anything on any of it. Although they interrupted Six Ways to Sunday to push back against Trump. They were trying to argue with him about, you know, the Ohio story with eating pets. They were trying to argue over fracking too. She came out. So audio sound by 35. She came out. Harris said that she would not ban fracking. She literally is on video saying that she would ban fracking. So ABC didn't ask her about this. Listen.
My values have not changed, and I'm going to discuss every one of the, at least every point that you've made. But in particular, let's talk about fracking because we're here in Pennsylvania. I made that very clear in 2020. I will not ban fracking. I have not banned fracking as Vice President of the United States. And in fact, I was the tie-breaking vote on the Inflation Reduction Act, which opened new leases for fracking. My position is that we have got to invest in diverse sources of energy so we reduce...
Which actually did ban. I mean, she's... This is one of the things that she has flipped back and forth on. And you would not expect anyone in ABC to hold her to account on this. In fact, roll the tape. We got it. Go ahead and roll the tape. It's amazing that ABC didn't ask her about this. Because David Muir, they were not prepared. Listen.
Community are immense, yeah. From contaminated groundwater to poisonous emissions.
Yeah.
Will you commit to implementing a federal ban on fracking your first day in office, adding the United States to the list of countries who have banned this devastating practice?
There's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking. So, yeah.
There you go. She said that at a CNN town hall. Excuse me. She said that at a CNN town hall.
2020.
That's when she was. Yeah, that was one of the ones where they were getting into the primary in 2020.
Her soundbite from last night said, "I've been saying this since 2020. I'm for fracking." It's like, no, you.
That was exactly from 2020. Opposite. She was for fracking. ABC did not ask her, why did you change your position on fracking? They didn't ask her that. That would have been something that would have clarified the issue for a lot of voters out there. ABC failed in their due diligence. Their reporters weren't prepared. They were prepared to be activists, but they weren't prepared to be journalists. I don't think that either of them were smart enough or had the knowledge base, either of the moderators, to actually have asked her about that issue. Why did you, in 2020, during the primary, multiple times on video, say that you support banning fracking, that you would ban fracking as president, and now you're saying that you do not ban fracking, and you're also saying that you've never said that you would ban fracking, but yet, here we have this video, roll tape. Here we have this video, roll tape. Tell us, Madam Vice President, what changed your mind? That's a question you would ask. If this was a real debate, which it wasn't. This was not a real debate. It was an activist forum. That's all it was. ABC, David Muir isn't a great journalist, and this Lindsay chick is not a great journalist. Neither of them are good anchors. They think that they have professional poker faces, but it looks kind of cringe. They act like Simpsons characters of what they think an anchor would look and sound like. They're not good. They did not moderate this debate well at all. Neither of them were prepared. If they were good journalists, they would have actually followed up with what I just asked. But they didn't. And Trump missed his opportunity to hit her like that. That's when you are the odd man out and you're in a hostile environment, you have to be prepared to do the job of the moderator by presenting that opposing information. The contradiction. You have to be prepared to do that. And so there were missed opportunities. The other instance with this, because we were talking about the abortion aspect, and they spent way too much time on abortion. But Tim Walz, he removed those protections. Democrats absolutely support it up until the moment of birth. That's not a red herring, and it's not false at all whatsoever. It is literally a position that is supported by countless Democrat lawmakers throughout the country. And for them to say that it's anything but is just a diversion from the actual claim. I mean, it really is. They also misrepresented medical emergencies and cases of incest as being unprotected or cases that are excluded from any kind of ban that focuses on recreational, using it as birth control, because those are protections offered by every state. So you're trying to scare women by lying to them, telling them that these are, and they account for fewer than 1% or less than 1% of all abortions, according to the Guttmacher Institute, which is Planned Parenthood's own far left think tank that did a study and does a study every few years where they tally all of this stuff up. It's all about recreational usage. And so when they were talking about it's less than 1%, she did the false thing about IVF, regardless of whether or not you agree with it. I mean, Trump has never said he was going to ban it. He's actually been in favor of it. And the late-term abortion on demand, that is what Democrats have been on record in supporting. And so they ran defense for her on that repeatedly. And they got her out. As soon as it got rough for her, they got her out of it. On fracking, there's so many issues thing with military, by the way, the military members. There was a point in the debate when Kamala Harris said, she said it twice, actually. Military members hate you. Oh, we talk military. These military leaders, they hate you. Do you remember that weirdo list of like a handful of these military leaders that were trying to blame Trump for Afghanistan? And they got into it a little bit in the debate last night. And we were talking about this in the chat. One of the things that needs to be brought up is that she kept trying to hit him and said that he was the one who released the prisoners from the Taliban prisoners from the jails in Afghanistan, when actually that was the Afghan government. And that was not something that was subject to the Doha agreement. And speaking of the Doha agreement, the Taliban from day one never honored the Doha agreement. It was never actually in good standing at any time. And she tried to say that he was friendly with the Taliban because he invited them to Camp David. The invitation to Camp David was a pressure tactic because the Taliban were dragging their feet at even accepting negotiations for the Doha agreement in the first place. So it was kind of, it was a bully move. And Kamala Harris, who is a woman out of her depth, she does not understand negotiations. She doesn't know what it means to get up and debate with the big boys, missed this entirely. I was embarrassed for her as a woman watching her trying to navigate that topic. I about damn near cringed to death. Do you know how frustrating it is for women to watch somebody who is so unintelligent and so unaccomplished be up on that stage attempting cosplaying as an avatar for all women? You know, ladies, I hope that if we ever take our shot, we send up a Margaret Thatcher and not these god-awful excuses for empowered women. It's embarrassing. You need to know a little bit of something about these issues if you're going to get up there and debate about them. It was never subject to Doha. And first off, it was the Afghan government that was doing it in the first place. My gosh, if I can understand this, surely Willie Brown's girlfriend can. Now, a few other things to hit. I don't know if you saw this that just came in. Interesting. So this story, U.S. election officials are warning that there could be widespread performance issues with the United States Postal Service in nearly every state to disrupt mail-in voting. Okay, so can we go to FedEx or something? Yeah. Or UPS?
Or in-person voting?
Yeah, or just like in-person voting. Can we just do that? The most, you know, one of the largest and most and richest and most advanced country in the world, and we're struggling with this? Are you serious? Oh, I know, because now, look, if you don't want people to be conspiracy theorists about elections, then you don't do stuff like this.
Thank you.
You make, how many, what do you mean there's going to, gosh, God help me. Can I just preface this by saying I should be able to criticize a government agency without people getting butthurt and thinking that I'm criticizing them if they work in said agency? Unless you are the postmaster, I don't need to be getting, I don't need people getting their feels hurt. This damn federal agency gets how much of our taxpayer dollars annually? And every year they get a boost. Every year they get a boost. Why are they having problems? Why is there any sort of problem with the United States Postal Service? They said mail delivery system. There's issues with the mail. These are government workers. Why is this a problem? Either deliver the mail or gut the whole damn department. Hell, the Pony Express was more effective. So done with it. We'll talk more about this coming up.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Carrying this one headline over from last hour, a mysterious UFO crossing the sky over New York City sparked talks of aliens. But sadly, everyone was disappointed because it was just not a UFO like that. Apparently, what did they say it was? It was the Polaris. Yeah, it was the space launch is what it was. And people were like, it's the Polaris Dawn. People thought it was the UFO, but no little green men. WTOP says roaches in nearly every room. DC files suit against a property owner. The residents are in horrific squalor. Tenants of housing complexes, they said that the conditions pose an imminent danger to health, safety, and welfare of tenants. Maybe he went broke and couldn't do it after he had the rent moratorium from lockdown. You know, that was like one of the things maybe he had to cut. I mean, you know, just saying. Internet's replaced the television as UK's most popular news source for the first time. Like, only now? Really? Only now? The media regulator describes the change as a generational shift in the balance of news media. They say more than 7 out of 10 adults in the UK, 71%, consume news online. And that their communications, said the UK's communications regulator, it's slightly ahead of TV. So it's like 70 to 70. Wait, how is it 70 to 71? 70% of adults, they said, slightly ahead of TV. They described the survey result as the first time that websites and apps have moved in front of television. It's the from the BBC's Question Time program. They said that the growth of social media as a news source was worrying. But they say that traditional news sources still outperform online rivals and blah, 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 whatever. Sure. I'm sure they do. Go ahead and tell yourself that. That's okay. And a robot begins removal of melted fuel from Fukushima. It could take a century. It's kind of sad. We got Congressman Chip Roy up next. Stick with us.
Make some common sense of the crazy headlines with the Dana Show podcast, your on-the-go guide for getting up to speed on today's most important stories. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or your favorite podcast platform.
Well, I think they think that it's already against the law for undocumented immigrants, for non-citizens to vote, and they think that this is creating an election issue where there really is not any evidence of widespread undocumented immigrants voting. But let me turn to this last issue.
Well, wait, Jake, let me just get your thoughts on this.
Okay.
Look, I was just going to say this. It is illegal for underage persons to buy alcohol, right? But we don't let them come to the liquor store and check a box and say, I'm over 21. We ask for identification. We require ID for all sorts of transactions in society. Voting is a sacred thing. Why would we not require proof of citizenship? It doesn't matter that you have a statute that says it's illegal for non-citizens to vote. If you're not enforcing it, it has no import, and that's all we're saying. This is common sense. The American people demand it and deserve it.
Like a mechanism for enforcement, and it's there's a lot of debate about this, and also the stopgap. I've just been hearing that there's so much arguing and so many fights going on, and we have Congressman Chip Roy joining us via Skype from the great Republic of Texas. He's in D.C. He was going to join us last hour, but he had to work. You know, he had to go and do his job, unlike some other lawmakers when they go to D.C. He actually, you know, like works on behalf of the people. Congressman, we appreciate your time. I know you're running around everywhere because I want to talk about the debate as well, but on this issue, so what's happening? I know that we have the issue of the CR and there's negotiations about this and the SAVE Act and protecting the integrity of the vote. What is the latest that you can tell us?
Yeah, Dana, great to be on. And I hope my signal's okay from the Capitol, where I am. I stepped out of a meeting to come over here and join. I mean, look, here's the thing. Mike Johnson, who you just played, I think, a clip of the speaker, he's correct in terms of how he's presenting the issue with the SAVE Act, which is our bill to require documentary citizenship to vote in an American election. We had a hearing yesterday in the Subcommittee on the Constitution, which I chair, on the heels of a hearing we had where we had Alexis Nungare, the mom of Jocelyn Nungare. We had moms of a lot of the victims of the crimes that have been committed by people coming here illegally. So to get back to the core point, we believe it's a central issue right now that we make sure that only American citizens vote in American elections. We passed it overwhelmingly, unanimous support by Republicans. Five Democrats joined us in July. But obviously, Chuck Schumer, Joe Biden, and Kamala Harris, they don't want to move it. So we believed, and President Trump agreed, that we ought to pick a fight on this heading into the fall. So we did, and we've been talking about it. But, you know, look, it is what it is. When you're talking about spending and government funding issues, and I certainly share my concerns with things like continuing resolutions that continue to fund the priorities of the Biden administration, which we objectively oppose, right, with respect to Secret Service, the Department of Justice, IRS, the open borders. We don't want to continue funding this garbage or Jack Smith over DOJ. But here's the deal. There's going to be a continuing resolution. So for all conservatives out there listening, well, what are you guys doing? Why would you do that? There's going to be one. The only question is what the flavor is, because it's a campaign season. The question is whether it's to December, whether it's to March, what it looks like, and whether we fight for anything. I believe we should fight for the SAVE Act in exchange for we'll agree to funding government through March, clear the decks, have an election, decide the priorities next year. Unfortunately, a handful of my colleagues, including some of my more conservative colleagues, didn't like the idea of voting for the CR. So we don't have the votes currently to get it done. I think the speaker was correct. I do think we should have done that in July. I think we should have had the vote in July, passed the CR with the SAVE Act and browbeat Democrats over August, had the message building, and picked the fight in September. But I'd still do it now, but we got a handful of our colleagues who don't agree. So the likelihood is we end up with a CR to December in Lake Town and go campaign. That's just, you know, it's the nature of the current environment in Washington.
So, it sounds like it's just a difference of strategy with some of the Republicans. Like, you know, some wanted to use the SAVE Act to, you know, protecting voting and trying to figure out the best way to word this, the least damaging CR possible and also protect the vote. Because as you said, I mean, they're really the momentum in the House, and particularly when you look at what goes through the Senate, I mean, it's going to happen. And it's not saying that you're endorsing it. It's just being practical about how to best mitigate it.
And look, there's a time for certain fights.
Right.
Last year, earlier this year, last fall, we're not in the middle of election season. You can have a full, robust fight over spending, fight over a CR or not a CR. Look, we worked to get appropriations bills passed. We passed 5 out of 12. Look, the conservatives opposed one of the last appropriations bills because it was a legislative branch appropriation. So we are where we are. It defies common sense heading into an election when we are now 50 whatever days out. Early voting has already started. To have a, you know, fight internally about what we should or shouldn't do about a certain level of spending with respect to the CR, when a CR is actually pretty conservative in its dollar amount. A CR is a freeze of spending. So if you freeze spending, you're doing better than most appropriation bills. I'd like to freeze spending to March, then get President Trump in, then have a full fight over the budget for 2026 and cutting spending. And I think it's going to be hard to do even then, but it's not possible to do between now and November. We just won't do it. You don't have the votes for a shutdown. You don't have the votes now for a CR plus save. So I think Speaker Johnson is probably going to end up having to put a short-term CR on the floor. We'll see. We're still talking about it. I'm open to suggestions. Everybody's frustrated in America with too much spending. Yeah. Everybody's frustrated in America with not having control of our elections and allowing illegals to vote. So we're trying to address those in good faith. You know who isn't? Democrats. So everybody kind of points your ire where it needs to be pointed, which is Democrats who won't work with us on any of it.
Yeah.
We're just trying to figure out how to navigate a complex environment in the fall.
And that was one of the things talking with Congressman Chip Roy that came up, you know, in the debate last night with the border bill. And you've talked about H.R. 2. And this has been, you know, obviously in Texas, this has been, you know, one of, you know, your lead issues. Because they always try to present it as, well, you know, Republicans, they just wouldn't come to the table. We had a great border bill and Republicans just nixed it. It wasn't a great border bill.
No, I think, look, my answer to that question, when Kamala Harris made that charge and then tried to bait the president with the thing about going to the rallies, my answer would be really simple. That legislation you're talking about was a fraud. That would have codified your open borders policies and made them permanent, damaging this country with more illegals in perpetuity. Republicans were right to oppose it. They opposed it before I, President Trump, did. And I'm proud to have opposed it because it's a disaster for our country. But you know what? The very bill that you're talking about would have codified the parole that led to the release of the two Venezuelans who bound and gagged and killed and raped a little precious 12-year-old girl, a girl that we should never forget, Jocelyn Nungare in Texas, whose beautiful young mom, Alexis Nungare, testified before the House Judiciary Committee yesterday. Hardly any Democrat showed up. A couple did. Hardly any showed up, showing a callous disregard for the impact of the Kamala Harris border czar, Joe Biden, Alejandro Mayorkas, open borders that are killing Americans. And that's honestly, I would have pounded her in that debate on that issue, and I hope President Trump will going forward.
If they have another debate, I think he needs to bring you in for debate prep, because I got to tell you, I was left feeling like he didn't close the deal last night. And I'm not, I tell, you know, our audience, I'm not doing this to be mean or harsh. I feel like it's a winning strategy to note where you came up short and to fix it. And it's the losers who don't want to fix where they come up short, and they want to roll into an election and end up losing it because they don't want to fix anything. I felt like it was a wash. And I honestly, I don't think either of them won last night.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think the president did a good job of making clear where he stands, and he punched back on some of the issues. Like, he pointed out, hey, I fired a lot of people. You haven't fired anybody. You keep all these bureaucrats. You know, I think he was clear that her policies on abortion to 9 months are absolutely ridiculous. He didn't have an answer to that. I think he hit on a number of other key issues. But I do think really needs to step on it if there's another debate or in future messaging. Step on the fact that she has been a total disaster on the border. And that we should remember, you know, Jocelyn Nungare. We should remember Kayla Hamilton. We should remember Rachel Marin. We should remember Lake and Riley. We should remember Lizbeth Medina. I can keep going down the list. These are humans. The kids that have died from fentanyl. Personalize it. These open borders are killing people. Don't just pivot to Springfield, Ohio, and talk about dogs.
Right.
Talk about 20,000 Haitians being dumped on a town of 60,000 Americans who have been peacefully living there for years, and now this administration is destroying their home.
Yeah, and isn't it fair? Isn't it fair to say too that they try to deny? Well, she wasn't the borders. She was more than that. She was more than what you know, just the nickname borders are. I mean, she was tasked by the administration not just with issues at the border, but also the contributing factors that were driving people up from Central and South America to the border. So it sounds like the responsibilities far exceeded that. And so that means that her failure was even greater.
Yeah, I mean, look, she was neck deep in this. She knows exactly what she's doing. And there's evidence she was significantly part of it by virtue of her title and her job to root out the root causes. We've had a massive flow coming up through Central America, through Mexico, into the United States. She's not just ignored it, perpetuated it. She's perpetuated the crisis that are killing Americans and killing migrants. Why don't we talk about 320,000 migrants who we've lost, according to the Inspector General from DHS? And why don't we talk about how dangerous it is with respect to Chinese nationals or the known foreign terrorists that are coming into our country? 99, according to a report from the House Representatives Judiciary Committee, which we put out 2 weeks ago.
I wanted to ask you, too, about this issue that just came up with the Associated Press. We're talking with Congressman Chip Roy from Texas. The headline is election officials warn that widespread problems with the U.S. mail system could disrupt voting. Now, I'm trying to figure out, Congressman, how the Postal Service, whose total operating expenses were $85.4 billion for the year of 23, that was an increase. In 24, it was also an increase. They had $19.7 billion for the quarter, an increase of $410 million. Their budget's out of control. Why are there any issues with this?
Well, look, we know, you know, your listeners, viewers know that when you talk about funding these government agencies, you're funding bureaucrats to do subpar work and to perpetuate bureaucracy. You're not funding excellence, right? FedEx wouldn't have a problem. They got to go compete. UPS wouldn't have this problem because they got to go compete. And the fact is, heading to election season, you got to wonder to some degree if it's purposeful. Yeah. Maybe they'll choose to deliver some. Maybe they'll choose not to deliver others. The fact is, when we get into this complexity of elections with mail-in ballots, it's ripe for fraud. We've been saying that for a long time. That was a product of COVID, where we ramped up mail-in ballots. We've constrained it in some places. We've had some reforms in Texas and Georgia and other places. But Wisconsin's still a mess. Pennsylvania still has issues. Arizona, frankly, still has issues. So we're going to have to all go do our part, show up. And you got to be too big to rig. I just got to be honest with you. You can't be counting 5,000 votes in Maricopa County or Fulton County or, you know, Cuyahoga County in Ohio or anywhere else. You better win by so much it doesn't matter. That requires everybody showing up. And, you know, we've got to turn the voters out.
Yeah, you have to defeat the margin of theft. It's not just the margin of error, it's the margin of theft. Congressman Chip Roy, always appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us the latest with the CR and the SAVE Act, because we've been watching this with great interest, and obviously we're hearing a lot about it from listeners. So appreciate you giving us some of your time today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dana. God bless you, Chris.
God bless. You take care, too. We have more to come, folks, as we wrap up this third hour. And we got Today in Stupidity.
The Dana Show Podcast, your fast, funny, and informative news companion for those always on the move. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All those things, I am incredibly grateful, first of all, to Taylor Swift. I say that also as a cat owner, a fellow cat owner. Look, Swifties, you heard it. We know that it's there. That was eloquent. And it was clear.
So Taylor, nobody cares. I don't care who Taylor Swift endorses. She makes such horrible decisions. I mean, her whole album, all of her musical catalog is all of her bad decisions about men. So why would I listen to her other decision about whom she's going to vote for? Right? I mean, it's like, you know, here's my music about bad choices. And now I'm going to tell you about my bad choice for the election. Ooh, nobody cares. Nobody cares.
Agree with my bad choice.
Yeah, at some point, I think people get over their skis. And she's like, I've done my research. No, you haven't. No one believes you have. Stop. Girls, stop. Don't bring that Brett somewhere to the election. Gosh, I can't wait for that phrase to die a horrible death. A couple of other things. Ooh, so 47, audio sound by 47. ABC even said Harris didn't really do a great job of explaining her positions. Uh-oh.
Vice President Kamala Harris did not do a great job today really explaining her policy shifts.
Oh, you can't call her racist either for saying that. I'm just saying, because that's what the left normally would do. She didn't. And so I don't think that Harris, this is why I say that neither of them won. Harris didn't win this debate either. And that's now apparently being reflected in some of the immediate surveys that are now starting to circulate, because her base thinks that she did great. But independents were like, wait, what? Okay, so where is she on? We didn't learn anything new. She was just kind of bitchy with some of her stuff, some of her quips to Trump. Otherwise, what else did we? Because she sacrificed her time to actually establish herself beyond being Biden's VP to voters to do like petty stuff to Trump, to talk about his rallies and all of this. I'm just goofy. So she, you know, Do we have time for 48?
I think so.
Let's play audio soundbite 48. Trump advisor Tim Murdaugh absolutely destroys. This is how you handle CBS and how you handle bad journalism. Listen.
Been talking about extending it to legal, other legal teams, to donors.
This is a spin room.
You know, it suggested the idea of prosecuting political opponents.
If you're going to ask a question about someone prosecuting political opponents and don't mention that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's Department of Justice are currently, at this moment, prosecuting Donald Trump, then it's not an honest and forthright conversation. They are currently, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and the Department of Justice are currently engaged in a prosecution that could...
That's perfect. Well done, Tim Murdaugh. That's how you handle the media. He needs to help Trump with debate prep, too. All right. Kane, today in stupidity.
Oh, man, there's so much to choose from. But one, cut 43. Cut 43. We had a lot of audio.
We had a lot today. And there's some I'm saving.
We had another DC villain looking guy, Jerry Nadler. He had this to say. Listen to this.
Mr. Chairman, Republicans rely on the false premise that there is widespread non-citizen voting in order to advance dangerous legislation like the SAVE Act and other burdensome, unnecessary measures requiring proof of citizenship to vote in federal elections.
That we ask for proof of citizenship when you're voting in American elections.
There you go.
The Democrats are horrible and Nadler's still stupid.
Folks, that does it for us today. Make sure you go sign up for the newsletter because we have all kinds of good stuff that comes out and you can take part in like our subscriber events. Like if there's ever another debate again, I don't know. We'll see. In the meantime, find us on YouTube, find us on Facebook, like, and subscribe. Find us again over at Substack and I'll be back with you tomorrow. Have a great night.